The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Welcome to a Thursday, everyone. Friday Eve. And I may just take tomorrow off. I'm warning you ahead of time because I'm just kind of hating life at the moment. So, welcome to it. Hey. So, if you try to listen right now on my individual stream at NicoleSandlerStream.com, it's not working today, just like everything else in my world. So, I apologize. So, listen to Progressive Voices or come over to YouTube. It is what it is. I don't know what to tell you. It's my life at the moment. Anyway, at least I'm having a better day than, a lot of women in this country who are of childbearing age, because the attack is on them. I'm pissed off about a lot of things today. So, feel free to join in if you are as well. I'm going to play you some videos. I'm going to share some stuff that is just unbelievable that's happening in this country. And then later on, today is Thursday, so Howie Klein will be here. And our guest today is Marie Newman. Now, Marie Newman is a progressive, the kind of person we need in Congress. And 2 years ago was her second run at that. It's working? Okay, well, according to this, it isn't. So, good. All right. Well, the gremlins. All right. Well, good. So, it's working. Lovely. So, never mind. At least something's working. Although on here it says it isn't. So, I see. I had the wrong thing. Okay, so it is working. Deep breath. Okay, so Marie Newman. So she had run before, didn't win, and then she tried again 2 years ago to oust the most Republican member of the Democratic caucus in the House of Representatives, Dan Lipinski, who basically inherited his seat from his also worthless father. And when I say worthless, I mean not representing the people who elected him. So Marie Newman won 2 years ago, and she's a progressive. So, of course, she's targeted by a faction of the so-called Democratic Party. I know we talk a lot about the divide within the Republican Party. One of these days, we really need to talk about how broken the Democratic Party is and explore the possibility of splitting. Because there's nothing in the Constitution that says we could only have two political parties. And God knows, or dog knows, more accurately, that our two political parties are fucked up. They don't do the job we need them to do. They both suck. Certainly one sucks a whole lot more than the other, but that's not saying much. Today's Republican Party is an embarrassment. How anyone can call themselves Republican today is shameful. But again, the Republicans know no shame. So the latest dust up is over this story that Joe Biden actually recounted, right? I think I have this audio here. You never know these days. No, of course not. That I closed that, didn't I? Let's see if I can find it. Joe Biden, do I have you here? All right, we do. So a little bit. Here's what Joe Biden said.
Imagine being that little girl. Just imagine being that little girl, 10 years old. Does anyone believe that it's Ohio's majority view that should not be able to be dealt with or in any other state in the nation?
You know what he's talking about, right? Here's the story. And it just broke a few days ago or a week ago, two weeks ago, because it was, you know what? Let me pull up my what's news, because I dealt with it in there. And this would be okay. So, let's to back up. On July 1st, the Indianapolis Star newspaper reported that a 10-year-old girl in Ohio was pregnant. she had been raped. And because Ohio had outlawed any abortion after 6 weeks, turns out this little girl was 6 weeks and 3 days pregnant. I guess they knew the date she was raped, so it was easy to pin it down. Well, she was brought to Indiana for an abortion because she couldn't get one in the state of Ohio. A 10-year-old girl raped with her rapist's seed implanted in her couldn't get an abortion in Ohio. Let that sink in for a moment. So she was brought to Indiana. Now, the source for this story was the doctor in Indianapolis, an obstetrician gynecologist named Dr. Caitlin Bernard. She had conferred with a child abuse doctor in Ohio. Here's a postscript. I'm jumping ahead to the ending. The state of Indiana is now looking at prosecuting Dr. Caitlin Bernard. Again, I say this in disbelief and disgust, but let's keep going. So President Biden cited that Indianapolis Star-Ledger report that this 10-year-old girl in Ohio was pregnant. Because Ohio had outlawed any abortion after 6 weeks, the girl had to be brought to Indiana for the abortion. Well, the right-wing, I don't know what to call them. I can't call them propagandists, because I can't even call them media. They are fake news, but because the former guy perverted that term, I can't even use that anymore. So the right-wing propaganda machine went on a what seemed to be like a concerted blitz to discredit the story, to call President Biden a liar. Now, I'll call President Biden a lot of things, but the liar was the former guy. Biden's got a lot of problems. Lying about everything is not one of them. Got it? Okay, so, my computer's doing weird things too. Hopefully, we don't lose the stream here, because I don't know what's going on today. The gremlins are after me. So anyway, so let me play for you. Shit, and if this is not going to work, then I can't play video. Well, I'll play audio. Are we still streaming video? There we go. It's back. Again, I'm having one of those days. I apologize. All right, so let me play for you a segment from the Fox Not News channel and how they dealt with President Biden, the statement that I just played for you, right? Okay, so this was this week sometime. On some stupid Fox show.
And the single source said to the Washington Post, thank you for reaching out. I'm sorry, but I don't have any information to share. So just dark.
Yeah, and that's against the backdrop of their code of ethics, which also includes we use confidential sources, sole sources, as the sole basis for published information only as a last resort and under specific procedures that best serve the public's right to know. Well, that goes to what you were saying, where they have deemed that the public's right to know is folded in with their agenda. Take it from me, because my wheelhouse was criminal law as an attorney. There's no shortage of 10-year-old rape victims. There's victims from infants through the elderly, both genders. There is more than you can count. There are so many monsters out there. So for me, what I find so deeply offensive is that they had to make up a fake one. There's actually
real ones
that I would love for them to use as advocacy for law and order. For actually commitment to prosecutions, to finding the perpetrator. But the fact that this alleged situation was created, and that was to serve the public's right to know, to further their position on abortion by a sort of sensationalist physician now that has now gone dark with zero acknowledgement of the perp and the victim and so much more components of this that real people have dedicated their careers and their dramatic efforts to on a daily basis that they think we're that simple, that they've reduced us. Oh, you're going to eat this up. You're not going to ask any questions. And it's going to be really good for your talking point. And then it gets amplified. It's horrifying. Americans know better than that. We're smarter than that, and we are more honorable than
that. Amen. And from inside the party, you might say, the Washington Post flags it as hockey puck.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, almost. And,
okay, but they got it wrong. So, yes, you know what? I got to stop this. These people are the fucking liars. And even Glenn Kessler, the so-called fact checker at the Washington Post. It's stunning what these people do. I spoke too soon. I was going to say, I think the streaming issue is fixed and now it's doing it again. I apologize. Please bear with me today. Or don't. I don't know what to tell you. I'm just at my wit's end. But I'm going to keep going because I got a show to do. So hopefully one way or another you can watch or listen. Where are we not streaming to? All right. It looks like Facebook isn't working. I can deal with that. All right. But YouTube seems to be back up. Deep breath. Okay, so that's the assholes at Fox. What? Okay, I know the audio is working. We were having problem with the video streaming. Some days I just shouldn't be here. This is one of them. So, you heard what Fox said. These idiots lie. Let me take you a little bit into the hearing about abortion rights where this subject came up. And again, yes, I know. The rapist was caught. And now the Fox, let me go there. Let's go there before we get into the hearing. So you had someone like Jim Jordan, who's such a fine, upstanding member of Congress and human being, she says facetiously. Jim Jordan, whose first name should actually be spelled G-Y-M, because it's documented that when he was assistant wrestling coach at whatever college was stupid enough to take him in, he witnessed his kids, the wrestlers on the team, being sexually abused by one of the coaches and said nothing. That's why we call him G-Y-M Jordan. He's a piece of shit if there ever was one. So this guy tweeted out... what did he tweet? Something along the lines of, Biden lied. It's all a lie. So today, now that we know what happened is yesterday in Columbus, Ohio, a man was arraigned on charges that he raped and impregnated a 10-year-old girl who had to travel from the state to Indiana to get an abortion. The story was ridiculed because Joe Biden recounted it. Everybody on Fox and all the other copycat propaganda fake news sources also said, oh, Biden has to make this up. Well, that's a shameful thing. It happens, but he has to make up a story. He didn't make up the story. That's your guy who does that. So Manu Raju of CNN caught up with Jim Jordan in the halls of Congress to find out why he deleted his tweet. His tweet that proclaimed it was a lie that this 10-year-old girl had to go to Indiana for an abortion. Let's hear how that went. But beware, because Jim Jordan's going to lie again, because that's all those people know how to do well.
You had a chance to speak to the congressman earlier today. What did he say?
Well, he claims that he was never questioning the girl's story.
Right.
He said he was only reacting to
right.
a headline that he saw. This was in reference to a story about the Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost, who claimed, that story claimed that he found no evidence to support this allegation that this 10-year-old girl from Ohio had to travel to Indiana to have this abortion. Jordan tweeted, another lie, anyone surprised?
Yeah.
Then he deleted that tweet. So I asked him about that and whether he would apologize to the family.
Another lie, anyone surprised?
Well, because we learned that this illegal alien did this heinous crime.
Okay, so you hear that? Because
so we deleted the tweet.
Okay.
Did you apologize
Wait.
For that?
He said, why did you delete the tweet? And he says, do you hear the spin that they're making? Well, because we heard this illegal alien raped the girl. Not the fact that, well, she was indeed raped. A 10-year-old girl was impregnated by a rapist. Instead, their focus on the story is, it's an illegal alien who did it. Oh my God, maybe it came down from, you know, the Webb telescope. Oh, not that kind of alien? Fuck you, Jim Jordan. Sorry, I'm in a mood today. Oh, let's keep hearing you lie, you twerp.
To the girl on the
family for suggesting a lie.
Never doubted the child.
Never doubted the child.
I was talking to a headline from your profession, the news profession, which happens all the time on
you.
Twitter. Doubted Joe Biden, which is usually a smart thing to do.
Yeah.
So then I also asked him whether or not whether this fact that this tweet came across as if he was, in fact, questioning the child's story.
He
said, no, not at all. I was just questioning Joe Biden. And then I asked him about the idea about whether a 10-year-old should be required under the law of his state to have this child carried to term if she is raped. He would not answer that specifically, saying this is up to the state legislatures.
No, it's not up to the state legislatures. That's the problem. And I hope you heard yesterday's show, because I guess it all comes down to the state legislatures. We are so screwed. We are so screwed, and not in any good way. All right, so let me share a little bit more, because there's more. Let me take you inside. This was yesterday's hearing, I believe. There were hearings yesterday in the House Oversight Committee on what's been taken away from women from this extreme court. And there's a hearing today in the Judiciary Committee. But let's start with yesterday. Yesterday, in the House Oversight Committee, Eric Swalwell was doing the questioning. I think this was yesterday. All the days run together. Don't quote me on that. It could be today. I don't know. I just know that it happened, and it's sickening. It's truly sickening. All right, so let's go to the videotape. And Eric Swalwell questioning this panel of people.
Gentleman yields back, Mrs. Swalwell.
Thank you. Ms. Foster, you think a 10-year-old would choose to carry?
In the 10-year-old case, first of all, the Ohio...
My question is, would a 10-year-old choose to carry a baby?
In the Ohio case, the Ohio Attorney General said that abortion would have been justified.
Focus on the question, please. Would a 10-year-old choose to carry a baby?
I cannot...
The answer is no.
Do you
no.
think a 10-year-old should choose to carry a baby?
No!
I believe it would probably impact her life, and so therefore it would fall under any exception and would not be an abortion.
What?
Wait. It would not be an abortion if a 10-year-old with her parents made the decision not to have a baby that was the result of a rape?
If a 10-year-old became pregnant as a result of rape and it was threatening her life, then that's not an abortion.
Really?
So it would not fall under any abortion restriction in our nation.
Ms. Warbelow, are you familiar with disinformation?
Yes, I am.
So he's asking another person now.
Yes, I heard some very significant disinformation.
Why don't you tell me about that?
Yes, an abortion is a procedure. It's a medical procedure.
It is.
That individuals undergo for a wide range of circumstances, including because they have been sexually assaulted, raped in the case of the 10-year-old. It doesn't matter whether or not there is a statutory exemption. It is still a medical procedure that is understood to be an abortion. Beyond that, I think it's also important to note that there is no exception for the life or the health of the mother in the Ohio law. That's why that 10-year-old had to cross state lines in order to receive an abortion.
Wow.
Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Warbelow.
Yeah. So thank goodness that Eric Swalwell, that there was somebody who had some information, who had a half a brain on the panel who could answer that question. Wow. Now today, again, the other hearing is going on. Let me just make sure that I know what I'm talking. Yes, it is on the House Judiciary Committee. On the panel, and these two same people are there. The first one, the one who said, it's not an abortion if they deem it necessary. That is Catherine Glenn Foster. She's the president and CEO of Americans United for Life. Yeah. The other person, the one who answered the question appropriately, is Sarah Warbelow. She's the legal director of the Human Rights Campaign. Now, questioning going on. So this is today, actually. And now I want to play for you one of the other members who, we love her questioning, but she's not there today. In fact, Katie Porter is at home because she has the COVID. But Katie Porter is Katie Porter, and she's still working. We love Katie Porter. I would love to see Katie Porter in the White House. Anyway, I digress. Katie Porter is brought out her whiteboard from her COVID-infected kitchen, and I'm going to play this whole clip for you. So you go, Katie.
I want to use my whiteboard to help Americans understand what this study found. Let's start with health. Rich women were more likely to suffer from physical health problems, women who had an abortion or women who were denied an abortion.
Hmm.
Women who were denied an abortion.
Okay.
Women who were denied an abortion. And rich women were, denying abortion does not just correlate with worse physical health, it also leads to financial problems. Which group of women, those who received an abortion or were denied an abortion, were more likely to be unemployed?
For sure, those who were denied an abortion.
Denied an abortion. Which group of women was more likely to live in poverty?
Definitely those who were denied abortion.
And which group of women was more likely to have low credit scores, to have their applications for housing or car loans denied?
Those who were denied an abortion.
So to summarize, women, when the decision to have an abortion was taken out of their hands, when they were not able to have an abortion, to make their own decision, they had worse health outcomes, were more likely to be unemployed, were more likely to face financial problems like living in poverty or having low credit scores. Women who were denied abortions are 4 times more likely to live below the poverty line. They are less likely to be able to afford food and housing for themselves and their children. Ms. Gosgraves, can you explain why people who are denied abortion are more likely to have these worse outcomes than someone who obtains an abortion?
If you're denied an abortion, you're not having a child based on when you actually want to. And what we know is that there's a wide range of reasons people determine that it is not the right time to have a child. It could be that their health is not the reason that they want to have a child at that time. But it also could be because they're not financially secure, they're in a relationship where it does not make sense. There are a range of reasons. That's why it's so important that that decision be the decision of the person who is actually pregnant, the person who is actually going to have that child, about whether or not they do that.
Ms. Gosgraves, I completely agree. We should let people who are pregnant make the decision whether or not to carry that child, to deliver that child, and to raise that child. I'm a mom. I love my 3 children. I know firsthand the joys and hardships of carrying, birthing, raising, and providing for children, including doing it alone, as millions of women do. That's why I believe so strongly that extremist politicians shouldn't have the power to force anyone to become a parent. The choice to give birth is not just a major health decision. It's an economic decision for an entire family, including other children that person, that mother or parent may have. Many women experience a significant decrease in their incomes after having a child, and income declines even further after the birth of additional children. Many parents are forced to leave the workforce altogether to care for their kids. When extremist politicians prevent Americans from making their own decisions, they force patients to give birth to children that they may not be able to care for, that they may not be able to protect and raise safely, and that they may force to grow up in poverty. We should live in a free society. Americans should have the freedom, the liberty to grow their families when they are ready to do so, not birth babies because of government mandates. I am here at home, sick with COVID, and caring for my 2 children alone. I do not need, and American women do not need, any politicians telling them when and if they should make the decisions to raise children.
No, exactly. And how awesome is Katie Porter? She's so good. We really need Katie Porter. See, that's questioning from an intelligent source, right? Here's some other questioning in these hearings. I'm trying to figure out which one to go with. We're going to go with this one, with Congressman
For this year,
Clyde.
Our new Supreme Court Justice, Ketanji Brown Jackson.
Hold on, because I need to give you visuals on this one, just because this guy, so you can see him, because you need to be able to hear, for those of you watching video anyway, hear whose brilliance this is. This is Congressman Clyde.
Was asked what a woman is, and she had a difficult time defining that. Since you are the president of the National Women's Law Center, I was hoping that you could define what a woman is for us in this committee hearing.
Well, as the president of the National Women's Law Center, you can imagine I say woman a lot in my day job.
Okay, so I'm just asking for the definition.
So what I'll tell you is I am a woman. That's how I identify.
Okay.
But I wonder, however, if in part the reason that you're asking a question is that you're trying to suggest that people who
don't
identify as women.
I am simply asking the question, and I simply want an answer.
I think it's actually really important to be very clear here that there are people who identify as non-binary. I think about 5% of young
people. We're not going to go there. I was hoping maybe you would. I was hoping that maybe you would say something that maybe we learned in high school biology that has to do with X and Y chromosomes, which define male and female, but I guess we're not going to get there.
It's 2022.
Well, I don't think that's the legal question.
I have another question
for you.
I have another question for you. I saw that in your annual report.
Yeah, you know what? That was a good place to stop it anyway. It's just insane. I'll give you one more. I'll give you one more from the good guys. Jerry Connolly. I forget where he's from, but he is pretty good. Watch this.
Ms. Hawley tells us, citing Ms. Justice Alito, there's no provision in the Constitution that says there's a right to an abortion.
No?
Show me in the Constitution where the founders in writing the Constitution granted the right to the Supreme Court to review and nullify legislation passed by the Congress or any other legislative body in America. Does that language exist in the Constitution?
Nope.
It's not how our Constitution is.
No, it does not exist at all. So by Mr. Alito and Ms. Hawley's own logic, this opinion is questionable based on the Constitution.
Yep.
In fact, do you remember when the first time the right to review legislation or the legislative actions of a legislative body was ever asserted by the Supreme Court? 1804, Marbury v. Madison, and it was made up by John Marshall, made up out of whole cloth.
Wow.
He said it was an implied power. No, ma'am, do you remember the first time, in fact, they used that?
Okay, so it gets cut off there. Sorry, these are clips that I didn't put together. But Jerry Connolly, thank you. It's like light and dark in this hearing. It's like the forces of good versus evil. It's just insane. It's just insane. I honestly don't know. Now, just so you know, while those were playing, I told you I'm having a day. My Zoom, when everything went crazy with the streaming video, it somehow affected the Zoom, and I can't get the Zoom to work. So we have Howie Klein coming up. He's always on the phone, right? But Marie Newman is also going to join us, and she was going to join in via Zoom with video. I just had to email her. Oh, that's right. Jerry Connolly is Virginia. I just had to email her and ask if we could do it by phone because I don't have Zoom capabilities today. Yeah, we roll with the punches, don't we? So I'll tell you what. I know I'm about a minute early, but that's all right. So let's try, anyway, to get Howie Klein on the line. And if anyone out there is mixing up any Dirty Debbies today, spike mine. You know, today is 7:14. Anybody have any Quaaludes left? Because I could really use one right about now.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTierney.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Hi, Howie.
Hey, and that's funny. I just was doing a thing about who picks up the tab for all those millions and millions of dollars of anti-progressive AIPAC ads.
Oh.
I have a list of their biggest donors. In fact, just a few minutes ago, I sent you a link to the post where I wrote it.
It's oh, did now. You?
Just,
okay.
It just went up.
I will look for it. I've been, you know, doing the first half hour of my show as I always do, and my computer sort of went batty in the middle, and now the Zoom is not working. So between, I sent Marie an email and told her, please don't try to go on Zoom. It's not going to work. Call me instead. And I gave her my other phone number, and I hope she gets the email because she's not going to be able to get in via Zoom.
Oy.
Unless, you know what? I'm going to try to open the Zoom window again because I can't get video, but I can get audio. So if she tries to log in that way, at least we'll have her audio there. Let me do this while we're speaking. So tell us about the piece you wrote, because there was another piece that I forwarded to you from the American Prospect that is also talking about this problem, and it is indeed a problem. Yeah, I don't see her in here.
Certainly, it is a very big problem, although my outlook on it was very, very different from the American Prospect. I respect what they had to say, and I, in fact, quoted them quite a lot. But to me, there's a really big deal that they don't seem to be talking about, which is that AIPAC is picking off progressives one at a time, and the congressional progressives can't seem to get together and defend themselves. So, you know, they won't exist.
Well,
I mean,
but
literally, AIPAC is just destroying the progressive movement. And the progressives are so terrorized and so frightened of AIPAC that they just sit there like thinking, oh, God, I hope they don't come after me next. Instead
right.
of trying to help the other progressives who AIPAC is attacking.
Right, right. Well, Howie, I think we have Marie Newman on the line.
Hey, Marie, how are
Yay!
You?
Yay! All right.
Hello, Nicole.
Hi,
Howie.
Hi, Marie. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm glad you got my email because, the gremlins have attacked me today. Oh, you know what? I see you. Now that I see you in the Zoom, I wonder if I bring you in there, if your audio
okay.
is good. Oh, and now I have video. Now the video is working. Wait, so go back to video. I'm going to hang up the phone. You know, I don't I don't control it. I only appreciate it when it works right. So let me get the shot up and we'll have you on video too. All right. So Howie, you introduce her while I get this figured out.
So Marie Newman is a congressman from Chicago, and she has tied for the single most progressive record of anybody in Congress, according to Progressive Punch. So, you know, even if there's 1,000 people in an organization or in a group, there's one person that's got the best, or in this case, two, since they're tied, and it's Marie Newman and Andy Levin. Ironically, AIPAC, which we were just talking about, has decided that they don't want either Marie Newman or Andy Levin in Congress, so they've been deploying lots and lots of dirty tricks and lots of money to try to defeat them both.
It's
and
shameful.
Marie already had her primary election, and the New Dem, who was being supported by AIPAC, won that election.
Now that was Sean Casten, right? Now was he was lost his district? Were they combined, or what
the
happened?
Districts were kind of merged.
It was a
yes,
bit more complicated.
In the
what happened in Illinois, Nicole, was that we had
We lost one district in the state of Illinois due to the census. And as you know, that always complicates things for a state. And so we effectively in Illinois, we took six districts, cobbled them together, and both my district and Sean's district, plus three or four other districts, were combined together, parts thereof, correct? And so Sean and I were forced to run against one another in the primary.
Wow. And so, okay. Now, and then, so this AIPAC supported group got behind Sean Kasten, as they're doing with a lot of other in other primaries where there's a, as I call them, conservadem challenging a progressive. They're going for the conservadems. They're trying to eliminate the progressives from Congress. And the problem is that leadership doesn't seem to be standing up for the incumbents or for the, you know, for the people who are already in office. They're not standing up for the progressives is actually what they're doing.
Yeah, and I think that's accurate. That's how it looks. God knows what happens, because there's things that that I still don't understand about Congress and relationships. I will tell you that, because it's so. I don't want to know, because some of it is so incredibly horrifying that I just don't want to know. But the reality is that in the case of Andy's race, my race, several others. Where they have gone after the progressive just because they are a progressive. So as an example, in Summer Lee's district, they spent, I think, $2 or $3 million on her. The super crazy far right pro-Israel lobby only spent $1 million on me from the outside. And then I don't know, Sean spent $2 or $3 million on me. But every time it's going after the progressive, it's pretty clear what they want. I mean, I said it in a tweet today that it is very clear what the Democratic Majority for Israel and AIPAC, their PAC is now called the United Democracy Project, what they want. And they want only conservatives and centrists and then Republicans in Congress. They don't care about, they do not want, they're making it clear that we are not going to be allowed into Congress.
So, Marie, I want to move away from this for a second because of a conversation that you and I had some month or so ago that I thought it would be really interesting for our listeners to hear as well. And that is the role of that money plays not only in elections, which of course it does play a huge role in elections, but let's go beyond that to the role it plays in Congress itself, where fundraising and just sheer amounts of money tend to dictate everything from who is going to be supported by the leadership to who's going to get key positions. I mean, right now I'm seeing AIPAC, it seems clear to me, although I can't get anyone else to agree, that AIPAC has their main goal is to put Hakeem Jeffries, who's one of their toadies, into the top leadership position, so that when Pelosi leaves, presumably in January, leaves the speakership, that Jeffries, who just kowtows to them and always has, even before he was in Congress, is their guy. They want to take over the Democratic Party through Hakeem Jeffries. But that's not the real point, and I'm not asking you about Hakeem. I'm asking you about the role of money in the top congressional decision making. Am I just being paranoid, or is that real?
I think it's real. I think that there are members of Congress that receive corporate PAC money that make their decisions based on what that corporation wants. I mean, that's very clear. We have, let's look at Build Back Better, Josh Gottheimer, and that group of nine people are heavily funded by top healthcare, gas and oil, and other price gouging industries. And those are the two most egregious industries for that, right? And so they were heavily funded by that, and they single-handedly killed the Build Back Better bill. And if we had had Build Back Better, if we had done a carve out on the filibuster, we wouldn't be in this perilous situation as Democrats going into the election. So we are in a situation now because of the decisions of a few have made a made it much harder for everyone.
You know, Howie, I just pulled up your article, though it's at downwithtyranny.com, and the headline reads, "There's no organized effort among progressives in Congress to defend themselves from AIPAC." And in it, there's a tweet that, you screenshot, and it was a, the original tweet was from David Dayen, who's the executive editor of the American Prospect magazine, who, Howie, we were just talking about that article that, they published today, and Dayen tweeted, AIPAC has dropped $6 million to defeat Donna Edwards in Maryland. More trainloads are on the way against Congressman Andy Levin. This is a special interest perversion of the primary process. And he links to the story, Howie, that I sent you. And then Marie, Congressman Marie Newman, tweets above that, yes, it's no longer a mystery what AIPAC and Democratic Majority for Israel's real goals are. A 100% conservative and moderate Congress, period. Howie, now Donna Edwards is a blue America. You know, it's funny because an article I read says, well, she's not exactly progressive. Yes, she is.
Well, I mean, her record when she was in Congress was progressive. Mm-hmm. She wasn't as progressive as Marie Newman is, but no one is as progressive as Marie Newman is. But she, but Donna was progressive, and doesn't mean, you know, that everyone has to agree with her on every single thing. It doesn't work that way. Nope. But she was a great member of Congress, and Blue America has endorsed her, and we're trying to help her to get reelected. It's, she's running in her old district again against a much more conservative Democrat, a lobbyist, as a matter of fact. And AIPAC has spent $6 million so far, and AIPAC said publicly that they plan to spend money right up until the very last day. They're going to just keep spending and spending and spending to try to defeat Donna.
And again, it's the group, DMFI, but Marie, you spelled it out, Democratic Majority for Israel. What? Now, this is the United States, right? Why is this getting involved in our primary process?
You know, for whatever reason, these groups that are, and just to be clear, I'm not, I mean, obviously I'm not picking on Israel. My husband's Jewish.
I'm Jewish.
Like to go down this path of anti-Semitism, and it's all a bunch of horse hockey. It's a deflection. But it, what it really is that, yes, we should stand united against against anti-Semitism. We should stand united against Islamophobia. We should stand united against any hate, right?
Right.
So what Democratic Majority for Israel is, their sole purpose is to make sure that you toe the far right line on Israel, that Israel can do no wrong, that we should never, ever criticize her, and that we should never, ever find her violations against humanitarian rights a problem. And so that's really what they say their mission is, right? I'm paraphrasing quite a bit. But the reality is that what they really want is to be, they want a bunch of people they can control that are robots. And they've been, they have a pretty good record so far. I mean, the people that have won are fairly robotic.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And they, you know, the idea is that if you, like Biden just said, he believes in the two-state solution. I think it's just, he's just saying it, but he said, he does say it. And that isn't what they want, and that isn't acceptable to them. If someone says they want this two-state solution, that makes them an enemy of AIPAC and an enemy of the Democratic Majority for Israel. They want, you cannot say that Palestinians are equal. That is not something that they accept. And if you stray from the party line, they go after you. That's why they love Hakeem Jeffries so much. He doesn't stray. He's their guy. He believes the same junk that they believe, as long as they keep the money coming. So, I mean, they are a problem. I was trying to, you know, go a little bit beyond that, and I keep coming back to them. And just to talk about the role of money in Congress in general and how that informs leadership, how if the leaders see that, you know, someone is bringing in lots and lots and lots of money, they have a tendency to say, oh, that, you know, look at that, you know, that's a leader, that's a someone of great quality, because they, not because they're, you know, writing important legislation and getting it passed. That's not what they think of as leadership. Leave that to us. You just don't worry about that. What they want are lots and lots of members who sit on the phone all day and call lobbyists and bring in cash and then share the cash with everybody else.
Right. You know,
am I wrong about that, Marie?
No, the notion that there are plenty of members of Congress that spend 4 to 6 hours of their day literally calling people or arranging fundraisers or whatever, that all related to fundraising, right? And for me, I've always said two things since I got into this is one is I'm never going to be beholden to the cash. I'm never going to take money that I think is inappropriate. So I don't take, corporate PAC money. But the notion that we should be spending that much time on the phone or dedicated to fundraising is crazy. I mean, it's just a crazy bad use of taxpayer money. So you're now paying us our salary to fundraise. And so are we electing good fundraisers? Frequently we are, by the way. We are just, I would say, there is a, I don't know what the percentage would be. It's well over half of the people that win are just really excellent fundraisers. I am not. I'm very bad.
And self-funders.
Oh, self-funders. Yeah. Well, they're a big problem. And that's who, that's who leadership likes because, hey, they can just bring their own money in, right? But they still probably make them do call times. They still probably put them on the phone in some office somewhere, right?
No, I mean, I think that it's them talking other donors into giving to other people. I mean, I know that many folks do call time for other members so that they can share their donors and that kind of thing, And look, some people just do it to survive. And so I'm not chastising those folks that are fundraising because they have to, and they happen to be very good. There are plenty of people in Congress that are good fundraisers and amazing members of Congress, right? There's plenty of those. The problem is when you get folks that are just really good fundraisers and maybe what we might call as good talkers, but they're not doers. So there's a bunch of different recipes to be a good person, a good member of Congress. It's mostly, for me, it was always about what can I do in the district? I was very in district heavy. A political science would call me an ombudsman because I would be in the district a lot and doing things on behalf of the district and doing things on the ground. I was very prolific. I was the third most prolific member of Congress in the freshman class, which was 80 people. So that's what I felt was the right model for my district. There are people that feel the right model is to gallivant across the universe, and go to every other country and, go to conferences and give speeches and that kind of, I just don't think that's what my district wanted. So just differences.
I'm wondering what kind
but
of...
noticed that you seem to be passing a lot more legislation than other members of Congress. I mean, it wasn't like you were an average member of Congress. It seemed like you were really every other day there was but very frequently there was an amendment that you had written or that you were sponsoring.
We were prolific. I will say that. Yeah, we were prolific, and we also had, I really believe in talking to other legislators about bills and not just, relying on staff and that kind of thing. And so when you do both, I have amazing staff in DC. They are outstanding. My district staff are amazing too with the constituents. And then my staff in DC are just amazing with legislation. I was just really blessed. So that's partly, if not most, the reason why we did so well.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that that's a better use of a member of Congress's time than sitting on the phone at the DCCC and calling rich people and sucking up to them, which seems like a really bad use of time.
Horrible.
Honestly, I would say this to my staff all the time, and they'd even get frustrated with me because I would whine about I'd say, every time I get on the phone, I lose a couple of brain cells because you just say the same thing over and over and over and over again. And it's like, literally, I'm sure half my brain was dying.
Now, for those of us who don't really know, are there quotas that are set by the speaker or by the leader?
Oh, no. Yeah, no. You. It's all about what your campaign needs. And so, like in Chicago, L.A., New York, you have expensive media markets, so you have to raise a lot. And had I kept my original Illinois 3, I wouldn't have had to raise that much money. It just would have been a fait accompli. But we had redistricting thrown at me, which is less than optimal, and have an almost entirely different district. And, it's going to always be an expensive race. And, I can raise some money. I can't raise, millions and millions and millions.
Right. But the point that I'm trying to get out is what a typical day looks like for someone. You said there are some who will spend 4 to 6 hours dialing for dollars. I know that there are offices set up for that, right? That you, I don't think you can do that from your actual congressional office.
You cannot do it on the premises of the Capitol. That would be verboten. And so the DCCC, which is just off the Capitol campus, is set up that way. I never used those quarters. I actually just would run home, literally run home and do it for an hour or two and then run back. Wow. And I just always told the staff, I'm only going to do it for an hour or two because it is not right to be spending time raising money for my campaign and sacrificing legislation and that's where that got me. I'll be honest with you. Then, I got defeated as a result that money played a big role.
But he also got all this outside money.
Go back to Nicole's question that you just asked about quotas. It's not so much that there's quotas unless you want a good job, like to be a committee chairman. Then there's quotas, no?
No, I've never heard that. I don't know that. I've never heard that, Howie. What they do say is that, in order to be a chair, you have to pass a lot of legislation, be an active member, be a leader, all of those things. I've never heard that there's a political criteria in there. It's just always, what you've done on the committee and that kind of thing.
That is amazing that I know it and you don't. I mean, that's incredible.
That is.
But I have been told that by many people, and I've actually seen the figures.
There might be something to that, but like I know chairs that are not good fundraisers. So,
Now, I also ask about, there's a couple of things that I want to know. One question, maybe it's a misconception. People believe that members of Congress, once you're elected, you get health care for life. That's not the case, right?
No. You pay into it like any other employee-owned or employee organization where you pay into it just like others do to their company or their nonprofit organization. But you do not get it for life. That's absolutely wrong.
But now is it the same that you get your insurance through the healthcare exchange the way I get mine, or did that never happen?
So you can choose the plans. There are some people that plan it on the exchange through Congress and some that do otherwise. I actually, because my husband had a plan, I chose not to use taxpayer money to pay for my health insurance. I had my husband's company. We got our family's plan from there.
Gotcha. Hey, I just want to pass along a comment from the chat room because I don't know what your plans are. Obviously, you're still in Congress through the end of the year. But there were a couple. Someone said, and a few people agreed that they hope you run for office again. Do you know if that's in your future?
Well, first of all, thank you. That's very kind of you to say that. I appreciate that immensely. I am not saying no to anything. As you can imagine, when you're in this situation, you have folks bringing you all kinds of ideas. Some are good ideas. Some are crazy ideas. Some of them are inappropriate ideas. And some I just don't know about yet. And I think that I'm leaving the door open for everything because you don't know what happens. There's no immediate race where I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do that. That's not happening at all right now. But weirdly, opportunities avail themselves very quickly. I'm going to be in the fight no matter where it's at. Like no one has to worry about me stopping fighting. And one of the biggest fights, as we all have been talking about here, is getting corporate money out of politics. That absolutely is a, because if we do that, then we're free to do a whole bunch of things that are really good.
Well, and I think to that end, maybe getting rid of Citizens United might be the first step. But to do that, we need to fix the Supreme Court, and we're kind of screwed on that front.
Yeah, and we have to get more. And here's what I'll tell you. A lot of corporate and conservative Democrats do not want to expand the court, unlike me. And my good friend, Mondeer Jones from New York, has a great bill that would expand the court. And we've done it before. Everybody knows this. There's precedents for this in other decades. We have done this before. So we can do it. It's just a matter of getting the conservative and centrist and corporate Democrats to realize they do not have to act like a robot.
Right.
They but can do what's right for the American people.
But that includes the president, doesn't it?
Well, I actually think that if there was a groundswell in Congress, he would change his mind. I do, just from other comments he's made.
You have more faith in him than I do these days. I was a believer. I mean, I was giving him the benefit of the doubt. But the remarks he's made in the last few days kind of throwing shade at progressives really has kind of pissed me off. He did it in Israel, and he did it regarding abortion, saying, you know, oh, it's a bunch of those activists who don't really represent the mainstream Democratic Party.
Yeah, that was not great. That was inarticulate at best.
At best.
Look, I appreciate a bunch of things that the president has done. I'm, you know, mostly happy with him. There are some things that when you get on shaky ground, you start to make inarticulate comments, uh-huh. right? And there's one, I guess there's one thing that I learned early on in this job is that you can't be afraid to lose it. You can't uh-huh. live and breathe and act and behave like you're afraid you're going to lose it. And I was never afraid to lose this job because I figured if I lost my job, I somehow deserved it because I wasn't in alignment with the people or wasn't doing the job that they wanted. And I lost my job a few weeks ago because this new district is very conservative and my opponent probably is a better fit. You know, I mean, and those are the things. So I do believe in the people's vote. But what I think happens with a lot of not just members of Congress or the Senate, but with presidents too, is they start to get on shaky ground with certain groups and then they start, you know, wavering and quivering a little bit. And I guess I just made up my mind in early days in this business that I would not quiver or waver.
And Marie, do you feel that most of your colleagues, so across the aisle, so both Republicans and Democrats, I guess the question I want to ask you is how big of a factor is that? How big of a factor is their careers rather than anything about serving the public? How much of what goes into their thinking has and their actions have to do with trying to hold on to their job? How important does that become?
A good question. I don't know percentages. I know plenty of people who are amazing public servants in Congress that are there because they are in alignment with their districts and they know what their districts want and they fight hard to get their values across. I do think that there's a fair number that are constantly into job protection. And I have a long and luxurious history in every job that I've had saying, well, I am not going to do that. So I guess I'm going to lose my job. You know, and I think I've been fired once when I was in my 20s because I was particularly lippy and learned not to be lippy, learned to be more respectful for sure. You got to do your job the right way and the way that it was set out for to be done. And if your job description changes, but you are not capable of change, and I think that's what happened here in when my district went from being Illinois 3 to Illinois 6, it was just a very different district. Illinois 3 was very happy with the job that I did. I don't think Illinois 6 was interested in, my way of thinking or, it just wasn't in alignment.
And then they were nudged along by all this dark money that was thrown into the race against you, targeting you.
The smear campaign was effective. Also think that, my opponent was very effective in getting all of these groups of donors that may have supported me in the past to go his way because he was a good fundraiser. Mm. And you know what? That you do have to make awful choices as these value groups and these advocacy groups. You have to make choices about candidates, and I would never want to be in their position. So I'm not mad at any of these groups that, you know, went Sean's way at all. They made a choice. They felt like he was a better fundraiser, and, you know, and he had an extra term. You know, he had a little more seniority than I do, although I had more seniority on my committees than he did. You know, they just made that choice, and that's okay. Like, I'm not mad at anybody for that. But it is sad that there are so many people that can only, like, they can't imagine not having that job. And right. I can imagine myself literally being a dog walker.
Like, I'm right. Well, tend to get their self value based on their job, whatever it is, whether it's in politics or in business, and they define themselves based on their job. That's why so many people in high positions, when they leave those positions, they just fall apart because they have no identity left. But I want to ask you another question. You've said a few times with us today that the job, the way you saw the job of being a member of Congress had to do with knowing what your constituents want and then fulfilling that for them. And there's no question that is a big part of the job. But what about the role of leadership? In other words, of, you know, sort of knowing, for example, that your constituents watch a lot of Fox TV and they're getting bad information, and you need to sort of nudge them along in a better direction. Is that something that members of Congress have to contend with as well?
I maintain that if you are talking about policies, what works, and real solutions that are proven, really, really, really listening. I've had, you know, in the last couple of years, I've had 500 meet and greets, right? Wow. And I really, really listen. In a very intent way. And I have of the 6 laws that I passed the House and the 2 laws that I have had signed into law by President Biden, they were a direct result of learning on the ground. Absolutely, 100%. And all the amendments that I've gotten passed, same thing. Like, they were just very specific things that people needed and wanted. So I really believe strongly in that. I can't do the job any other way. Like, that's the only way I can do the job. Now, that said, that may not be for everybody. But leadership, I think, should be doing the same thing, but on a broader scale with the nation. That's what I think.
I don't know if it's proper to ask you this now or not, but I will. My contention is Democratic Party, especially in the House of Representatives, needs new leadership. The people who are leading the party, and it's not about age, it's about ideas. It's about, you know, Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, Jim Clyburn do not represent the future. And I don't understand why they don't step aside and let the next generation take over and control their own future. I think they've overstayed their welcome. Do you get that feeling in the caucus? Does anybody feel that way, or am I like out here alone?
I think there's sort of a million different feelings in the caucus. Whenever we get to a turning point like this, there's a set of people that will run for, and it, God willing, we keep the House. And I think there's a good possibility, unlike what you hear in the news every day, I think there is a possibility that we keep the House. And God willing, we do. And the people that run for leadership, you do have to be a very special. I will give them that. You have to be able to be eternally optimistic and completely, what is the word? Feckless is not the right word. It's impermeable in terms of criticism, because you have to have a certain level of that. With those qualities, I also think that you have to have a really strong pulse on the nation. And I would say that through the Trump years, that group of leadership did a very good job of rolling it our way. So we are just eternally grateful for Pelosi, Hoyer, and Clyburn and the rest, that they literally turned the tide over. is there a distinct possibility that we have better leaders that are more suited for this specific time and space and need? Yeah, I think there is. Did they do a great job? Yeah, I think they did. But I do think that potentially we're now in a new space and time where we need new leadership that would be more appropriate. And it doesn't matter what age they are. Like, I care less about their age or their ethnicity or whatever it is. Like, whoever's just really good for the job. And so I hope that happens when people vote. I won't be a part of that voting, obviously, but I hope when people vote, they find someone that really, really, some people that really, really understand the complexity and the lexicon of our nation and the, you know, wants and needs.
Everyone has told me that it's a foregone conclusion that Hakeem Jeffries is the next leader of the Democratic Party. Even people who don't like him, as well as people who do like him, all of them say it. No one, there's not going to be any serious challenge, and he's got the job. How does that happen?
Good question. I have heard that a bunch too, Howie. Like, I don't know. You know, like, I know Hakeem, and you know, he's been helpful to me, and all of those good things. I don't know how that happens, but I do know that money has something to do with that.
He's a good fundraiser. He spends a lot of time on the phone, I bet.
And, you know, traveling the nation and, yes, you know, doing all of that. I mean, he's a very energetic guy. Here's the interesting thing about Hakeem. Like, you know, he's really smart. He is one of those folks that is impermeable to criticism. So, you know, you do have to kind of be that model. It's really tricky. I don't like his incredibly close relationship with DMFI. I don't think that's helpful to be close to a super PAC. And I'm not picking just on DMFI. I think it's true of any super PAC. Like, you should not have a strong relationship with any of these big PACs or advocacy groups. I just don't think it's...
Right. And that brings us back to Citizens United in the Supreme Court, because if that wasn't there, then they wouldn't have so much power. They wouldn't be able to raise this kind of money without saying who the money came from and give it, you know, in unlimited amounts. Anyway, we are in overtime now. Maureen Newman, thank you so much for joining us today. I was really saddened when the primary went the way it did. We need you in Congress. I'm really sorry you're not going to be there in the next term. I think we've got huge challenges, and we were better with you there.
Well, you're very kind, and always love chatting. It was lovely chatting with you, and wishing everybody out there two things. One is, remember all of your friends who are lazy about voting, tell them to get their heinies up and to vote.
Yes.
Secondly, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Sometimes we have to vote for good leaders instead of perfect or great leaders. So just know that that's the time right now.
Yeah, sometimes we even vote for the lesser of two evils. Howie won't do that, but I do.
But also too, just on that note, that doesn't mean that we can't push for greatness.
That's right.
At another time. Like, honestly, like, let's just all know that during our time in Congress, we push for greatness. I think that we can still attain that. It's just that we're in a bit of a tenuous situation right now, and voting is the most important thing. Progressives have got to turn out. They did not turn out in my race, and here we are. So it's a cautionary tale.
It is. It is. Howie?
Thank you very much. It was so good to chat with both of you, and both enjoy this beautiful Thursday evening.
Thank you so much, Maureen Newman. It's great to talk to you, and I hope you'll stay in touch and stay active, because we need your voice.
Absolutely. Take care, guys.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye, Marie.
All right. So, Howie, she's great. I'm really sorry. She's also a politician and is still working with these people. And I didn't expect her to, you know, be critical of the people that she works with, but she's very magnanimous. I'll put it that way.
She certainly is.
Yeah. Sad. It's just sad. It's sad. And a reminder that we talked about Donna Edwards, her primary is this coming Tuesday. It's the 19th. And the same group that targeted Marie Newman is targeting Donna Edwards. With that kind of money.
With much more money.
Much more money.
They have spent already $6 million on Donna.
Wow.
$6 million.
$6 million in a primary for one district in Maryland. This is how much they don't want her there. That should show you how much we need her there.
Yep. I think there were only two white people that they targeted. Of the couple of dozen people that they went after, they were all, almost all of them were black women. There were a couple of black guys as well, Hispanic people. But it was almost always people of color who they went after.
Of course.
Marie, it was an exception.
Wow. All right. Howie Klein, as always, thank you. Somebody asked the other day, where can we go on Blue America to see the list of who your candidates are? So you can go to downwithtyranny.com/blue-america-pack. That'll bring you to the Blue America page. And then if you go in like you're making a donation, it pulls up the different lists, right?
Nothing pulls up all of the lists. You okay. have to, you know, spend your life reading Down with Tyranny, and then you'll get all the lists. But there is another way to do it that's very easy. If you just go to downwithtyranny.com,
yeah.
On the very top, there's something that says About.
Ah.
And if you hit About,
uh-huh.
it takes you to the Donate page.
Oh, so that's the shortcut. From the About.
Right.
You get to the donate.
Member slashes. And
I gotcha.
Like
oh, much easier then. Okay. Yeah. I do everything the hard way. Welcome to my life. All right. Well, Howie Klein, you have a wonderful week. I will talk to you next week. And we'll keep our fingers crossed. Everybody, if you're in Maryland, it's the only race. It's the only primary this coming Tuesday. Vote. And if you know anyone in Maryland, tell them to vote. It's that important.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Howie.
Amen.
All right.
Bye.
All right. And with that, we're done. I'm going to leave you with the news, and we'll see about tomorrow. If I'm not here, I promise I'll run something really good. All right. It's a tough time. I'll leave it at that.